President Trump's attorney confirmed the recording's existence, but also said a payment was never made. This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared. And the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too. So why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
Tornadoes swept through central Iowa, injuring at least 17 people, flattening buildings in three cities, and forcing the evacuation of a hospital. These two eyewitnesses describe what they saw.
It was crazy. We saw the tornado jump down, and it hit plant three, and then it looked like it bounced over four, and then hit five, six, seven.
According to two sources, former CIA director John Brennan still has top-secret government security clearance. With the security clearance, Brennan has the power to view classified government documents, discuss classified topics, and also view highly personal information on American citizens. Senator Rand Paul was asked on Fox News what is being done about this.
What we're going to do is we're going to send a letter not only to the president asking whether he still has clearance, which I think the president might be interested in this issue. I'm sending the letter also to Sessions and also to Dan Coats, who's over all of the intelligence. So we are going to press the case and we're going to find out, does John Brennan still have clearance?
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn-Root. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that could go wrong. Economic collapse, stock market crash, terrorist attack, war with North Korea. There's a lot to worry about when it comes to protecting your income, assets, and your family's future. Thankfully, my good friends at Tangible Investments are your safe haven from the storm. Call now, and Tangible Investments will send you, absolutely free, a one-ounce American Silver Eagle, along with your guide for investing in precious metals. To receive your free American Silver Eagle, call toll-free 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000.
On Thursday, President Trump signed an executive order on jobs. Now, how will this affect people and how will it get some people back to work that are looking for work and also help train some people? Well, Congresswoman Claudia Tenney is with the 22nd District of New York, and she talks about, she's also a small business owner, she talks about how this is going to help her company.
And our biggest challenge is, and I've been to at least close to 100 businesses around my region, probably about 50 doing business roundtables, whether it's manufacturing, small businesses, and then another 50 since tax reform to hear about how great tax reform is working for them, and also the rollback of needless regulations. You know, we have really moved the economy in the right direction, but this is the next step. So now that we've created all these jobs, we need people to fill those jobs, and that's exactly what the president rolled out today. He made a pledge to the American worker to invest in apprenticeship, which was kind of fun. He said the word apprentice. He got a little laugh out of it. Here I am talking about apprenticeships again, and talked about that and how we're going to retrain the workforce of tomorrow and get these people back to work. And it was really spectacular. He had his whole cabinet in front of him, and then around in a huge round table, he had members and leaders of big companies around the country, whether it was FedEx, founder Fred Smith, all kinds of people standing up, and each one of them addressed the president and said, our companies are going to invest in creating workforce development, P-TECH, all kinds of issues.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We are in an era where we are constantly bickering. We have those on the right who are angry. We have those on the left who are angry. We are going back and forth. We seem to talk past one another constantly. We have our own websites. We have our own social media. We have essentially our own dedicated cable channels. And it's a very difficult time to patch things up. Some people, however, are trying, and Sally Cohn is one of them. We're going to be speaking to her today. Her new book is The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
How did we arrive at this low state? I mean, we can talk about Donald Trump, but it really started before then, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's I don't know. I have some theories of how we got here, right? It has it's about a combination of the nature of the media environment that we're in, the political environment. Like, politics in modern the last 50 or 60 years have actually deliberately stoked anger and animosity among people as a turnout strategy. Both parties have done it. The Republicans have done it a bit more and made it a core strategy to, stoke hatred and fear and resentment. The media took on a lot of that, both because of changes in policy and because of more competition. They saw they could, look, they need more audiences more, and one way to get audiences more is to have more fights. So there's that, too. And then, of course, this all happens in the context of the fact that we're have a pretty hateful history as a country. It's not like hate, divisiveness, otherizing is anything new to us.
No, that's a very good point. It unfortunately, I think, comes to us kind of naturally. And there really hasn't been, I don't think, any single moment where we've stepped back, looked at ourselves, examined what we've done, and thought about, what do we really do? I mean, maybe the 60s came close, but it wasn't a really, really thoroughgoing moment where, for example, like in South Africa, you had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Sure.
I think we almost need that in the United States, but where do you start? Because there's so many issues on which you could begin that.
Well, even just having that conversation is interesting because it acknowledges that we have the residue and scars of the hate in our past that are still impacting us as people and as a country today. And so if we get to the point of then saying, okay, what do we do about it? How do we move forward? At least we've acknowledged that's a reality and a problem, whereas we're still honestly fighting over that. There are a lot of people who want to say, like, look, that's the past. It doesn't matter now. But when you look at the inequity in our schools and our communities and in policing and in wealth and in home ownership and at every single layer. And you see those inequities play out by race, by gender, by immigration status, by religion, by sexuality. You know that that is because that residue of hate has left its thumbprint on our society and all of us.
We're speaking with Sally Cohn. She's the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. It's all well and good for you and I to sit here, Sally, and talk about, you know, what we ought to do and what we have to acknowledge. But as you alluded to a moment ago, there are plenty of people who don't acknowledge that there's even really an issue to begin with. How do we approach folks like that?
Well, I think the key thing is first to talk to people in a way that doesn't stop them listening. And, you know, look, and I'm not telling people what to do. I'm saying what personally for me works and what I've found to be my own journey. And if you are in a situation with someone where you feel politically confrontational with them or ideologically, or, you know, obviously people have to make choices that are about their own safety, their own self-care. So, you know, one option is certainly to just not engage. If you are going to engage, if you do feel like you can engage, I think it's important to engage in ways that people can hear you. Because when we just start yelling at people, and when we just start trying to, you know, attack their opinion with our opinion, or worse, when we start to actually attack them as people, when we make it personal, then they, not only is that mean, but they don't listen. People don't listen because people don't like being told they're stupid or they're hateful or they're this or they're that. So at the very least, beginning things in a, trying to have conversations that at a core, at a base, have mutual respect and respect for each other's humanity is critical.
I don't know if you found this personally in your experience, but one thing that has guided me when I have attempted to do this sort of thing is when you're trying to engage someone that you may differ from significantly, politically, culturally, etc., don't do it online. It is much easier not to listen online. It's just structurally so much more difficult to get through to someone, and I find that all the conversations that I have had in person, directly, engage the humanity. People are more polite in person. People like can see your person with a face and a body and a real human being, and that means something. It's significant to people, even if we don't think about it.
Yeah, you know, if that's true, sure. And one of the things I cover in the book is some of the research on why it is that technology, social media can be inherently dehumanized. However, there's also examples of how people have reached across differences, shown kindness, generosity, humanity in the face of cruelty in ways online that have radically transformed people and helped them move away from extreme hate. And the truth is, you know, the book's called The Opposite of Hate, and the opposite of hate to me isn't love. You don't have to love people to not hate them. You just have to not hate them. And what the antidote really is connection. Because when you know people, when you have experienced your mutual humanity, it is harder to hate them. And one of the things that's amazing about the internet and amazing about social media is that it brings us this potential to know and care more about and understand wider circles of people than we may have in our own homes, our own schools, our own workplaces. That's also a potentially great tool for fighting hate. It depends on how we use it.
Well, I guess then that even if it means spending more time on Facebook or Twitter, I'm going to have to reread that section of the book and give it a little extra effort, because I suppose there are only so many people that I can reach in person, and it's important to keep as many connections in digital and analog both. We've been speaking with Sally Cohn. She is the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, thank you so much for being with us and for making this effort. All the best.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
What is it costing you in vet bills for that convenience of just pulling open a bag of
formulated, extruded, processed cereal bits that cost a ton of money anyways?
How do you feed your dog to derive not only energy, but a good coat, bright eyes, and a great attitude?
Come to Dinovite for help.
Dinovite.com.
I found his raw meat diet on Dinovite.com.
With just the raw meat and the eggs and the Dinovite and the Super Omega on top of it.
Try Super Omega fish oil.
Buy two, get one free.
Ground beef, white rice, eggs, including the shells, and the Dinovite supplement, and then the Lico-Chops.
Try Lico-Chops. Buy two, get one free.
It just balances out his body and his mind and his spirit.
Adding Dinovite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
Their skin is so much better now that they're on the raw diet. I don't even give them the kibble anymore.
Dinovite.com.
Smart home technology? Meet beautiful window coverings with Smart Shades by Budget Blinds and Lutron. Easy and affordable automated shades that open and close at the touch of a button. Budget Blinds is North America's number one provider of custom window coverings, and Lutron is the most established name in smart home technology. So now you get the best in both fashion and function with our beautifully styled Smart Shades. We're your local experts, and we do it all for you. You just sit back and enjoy the seamless functionality of smart home automation to program and control your shades. Get style and service for every budget. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS for your free smart home consultation. Call now to get a free smart lighting control bundle with your smart shade purchase. 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Or go online to budgetblinds.com. At participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. I have always been fascinated by the English language and, in particular, by British mannerisms of speech. Perhaps I have a little bit of Henry Higgins in me. Well, we're going to dig deeper on that front today. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of the blog Separated by a Common Language and the book The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn Murphy, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. So what was your first experience as an American encountering the Queen's English in its native land?
In its native land? Well, it was just 18 years ago. I moved to England to take a job at the University of Sussex, and that was my first time in England, there with all of my worldly belongings, moving there to stay. But I had lived in South Africa for 4 years before that and had started to learn some of the lingo.
And I suppose it's a separate question. What's the difference between the lingo in South Africa, let alone the accent, versus England? But what did you notice as an American? What did you most experience difficulty or at least shake your head a little bit at when you first started speaking with folks on a regular basis there?
Well, I think once you really live in a culture rather than just being a tourist in it, you have a lot of administrative vocabulary that you need. A lot of, the bureaucracies
right.
are all different.
Right.
So you do a lot of learning what the terms are for different departments that you need to talk to and different documents you need to have and
right.
boring stuff like that. South Africa has got some of its own lingo. So, for instance, a traffic light is a robot. There,
oh, wow.
And there's some other fun things coming from other languages there and a lot of different accents. So I was, in South Africa they use British spelling and they use a lot of the words like biscuit instead of cookie or pavement instead of sidewalk or things like that. So those kinds of things I was prepared for, but there were also a lot of differences.
I know that there are a lot of transplants on both sides of the Atlantic, especially between New York and London, a lot of professional exchange, certainly between those cities at the very least. Do you think that there is more of a language shock for an American coming to England or for a Brit coming to New York? And what are their respective experiences in, as far as you've been able to tell?
Well, I think British people hear a lot more American voices than Americans hear of British voices. So there's a lot more American TV, a lot more American music playing there than vice versa. So they come expecting to be able to communicate fairly well and, of course, knowing some of the lingo already. But I'm sure they're surprised by a lot of the things that they don't know. I've been doing a difference of the day on Twitter since 2009. And I mostly do a different difference every day. I've done thousands of differences. So you will just keep learning more and more and more the longer you live in one of these places.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. You are married to a Brit. Are there still moments where one of you doesn't know what the other one is talking about?
Yes. I mean, some of it, I think, is down to stubbornness at this point. But
I know that's true of my wife and me, and we both speak American.
Yesterday he was complaining about, you know, when he asked me a question, you know, do you want to do this? And I say, sure. And he'll say, I don't know what sure means. I'm like, I've told you 1,000 times it means yes. But he takes it as, you know, resisting. So, you know, those kinds of little interactional things, the way that British people and American people make suggestions can be a bit different. Mm. And so, he can sort of bristle at me sounding a bit bossy compared to how he'd want to put things. So, you know, there's those kinds of things. But, you know, we're aware of them. We get past it.
Well, that's an interesting observation there. To what extent are those cultural attitudes embedded in the language, or are they just a product of the language more than the culture? I suppose in a way it's a chicken and egg question. Are Brits really hyper?
Absolutely.
Are Brits really hyper polite, and are Americans really bossy and rude? I mean,
you can't really judge it that way.
Right.
Because what sounds bossy in America doesn't sound bossy in Britain, and vice versa. You know, so nothing in the language is inherently bossy. It's what you're used to hearing and the conditions you're used to hearing it in make things seem bossy. So, for example, British people say please a lot more than Americans do, at least twice as much more. And they do it in situations where Americans wouldn't say please, because Americans tend to use save please for pleading, for sounding desperate or sounding bossy. So in ordering things in a restaurant, for example, an American will say, I'll have the something, and the British will say, please may I have something.
Right.
And it's not that the British is necessarily more polite. It's just the way they do it. On the other hand, Americans say thank you about twice as much as British people do. So we're both doing polite things. We're just doing them in different ways. An example of that would be, if you offer me a piece of cake, in America I might say, yes, thank you. But in Britain I'd have to say, yes, please. So we're using the same words for slightly different effects, but we're all being polite in the way we know how to be polite.
I know my wife and I are certainly among them, but there are many in the United States who are Anglophiles, who watch a lot of British television, who listen to the BBC radio with some degree of frequency. How much of that do you think is a result, I'm sure it varies from person to person, of these little linguistic differences and those being just kind of moments of pleasure and a pleasant disorientation, so to speak?
I think people really enjoy that kind of thing, but I think we have especially more patience for it or enjoyment of it when it's British. You know, there's this sort of idea of Britain as being cool or as being educated or as being lots of other things. So, you know, we do, those of us who like to watch things from different places do enjoy that aspect of it. You always learn a little bit. You always wonder a little bit when you watch something and they're using different words. But I just noticed that we do that a lot with British, but we don't seem to do it with, say, you know, New Zealand or Canada.
Right.
You know, there's
a
certain cachet that Britain has for Americans.
So having lived there for a while, tell us the truth. Are they cooler and more educated?
No.
Okay. Drat.
That's the thing that you have to get used to is that, you know, British people are just people. And, you know, the education, the picture that we get of Britain in America is usually sort of upper class Britain. You know, if you watch Downton Abbey or if you watch Sherlock or if you listen to BBC broadcasters, you know, you're not hearing people on the street talk. You're hearing a sort of upper refined kind of speech that comes from certain schools and certain places. Whereas, you know, in everyday life, there's a huge variety of ways that people speak and a huge variety of personalities and a huge variety of levels of education and intelligence, just like in America.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
We're Sound Income Strategies, and baby boomers who work with us know the secret to a great retirement is our middle name, income. At Sound Income Strategies, we transform high-fee, high-taxed retirement spend-down schemes into sustained retirement income. And we can do the same for you. For your free, no-obligation income kit,
call 866-913-1234. That's 866-913-1234.
It's time to get off the Wall Street roller coaster, stop the retirement spend down schemes, and join the income generation. For your free, no obligation income kit,
call 866-913-1234. That's 866-913-1234.
Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies LLC, an SEC registered investment advisory firm. Sound Income Strategies, the secret to a great retirement is our middle name.
Call 866-913-1234.
USA Radio News.
Today at United Nations headquarters, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was asked about the denuclearization of North Korea. He says it's been all laid out for North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un what he needs to do.
Chairman Kim made a promise. Chairman Kim told not only President Trump but President Moon that he was prepared to denuclearize. The scope and scale of that is agreed to. The North Koreans understand what that means. There's no mistake about what the scope of denuclearization looks like. So what do we need to see? We need to see Chairman Kim do what he promised the world he would do.
According to the New York Times, the FBI has a secretly taped conversation of President Trump and his longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, discussing paying hush money to a Playboy model who allegedly had an affair with Mr. Trump. Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's attorney, confirmed the recording's existence, but also said a payment was never made. This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Now that you've lived for quite a while in England yourself, how many aspects of British English have you adapted into your personal mode of speech?
Well, I like to say that my accent lives in Atlantis because I mean, I was mistaken for British the other day in Ithaca, New York. So, you know, it's because I pronounce my T's rather more crisply than I used to. Right. I just said rather more. That sounded pretty British.
Right.
Some of my vowels are sort of halfway between, and there are a lot of words that I've just come to say in the British way, either because I want to be understood, so I have, you know, it's easier to get my sandwich if I say tomato rather than tomato when I order it.
Right.
But also because sometimes the argument that ensues if I use the Americanism is just too much to bear.
Right.
Or not the argument, the mockery. So, you know, something like, I'll say herb now instead of herb for things like
right.
parsley, because if I don't, I have to go through a whole spiel to whoever.
You have to identify yourself. Where do you come from? The whole conversation. You're obliged almost to a 2-minute conversation under the best of circumstances.
Yeah, and it's often, you Americans, why do you say it that way? Why do you say it wrong?
Right.
And,
okay.
I don't want to get into that because it's not wrong. It's just American.
Exactly. So to smooth the way, you kind of
do it. Situation.
Right, right. How many of these differences have we picked up and adapted? I notice especially, it seems to me that there are a few, and no specific ones occur to me now, but there are certain British modes of speech that have been adapted, especially in big cities among younger folks in the U.S., and I'm sure that must be the case on the other side of the pond as well. How much is that happening that you notice?
Well, it happens all the time. It happens much more in the America to Britain direction because of that exposure to American television and such. But also, there are a lot more Americans than there are Brits, so there's more language, more American language being heard in the world these days than British. So a lot goes over there, and there's a lot of backlash to it. When British words come over to America, either they're seen as something a little bit pretentious, they'll be cool in some circles but not others, so to say a queue rather than standing on the line, or to use the sort of super British words like gobsmacked.
Yes.
That's sort of cute. But other things just come in under the radar. So, for instance, in the 2008 elections, all of a sudden people were vetting
right.
candidates and vetting people for the Supreme Court, and that was something that came over from British racing slang. And I don't think most people who started using the word knew or started reading the word knew that it was coming over from Britain, or when children suddenly started going missing instead of vanishing. I don't think most people realized that was coming over from Britain. But there are lots of things that do that.
I don't think that a whole lot of people prior to the, at least I remember it from 2003, and it's sort of recurred in the wake of the controversies surrounding President Trump, that the word dossier much came up in American English. But I certainly remember that being around a lot in the media for the first time around the lead up to the Iraq war, given the dossier that was compiled by the Blair government, and then again with regard to Christopher Steele. That in particular seems to be a Britishism, or a more frequently heard word in British at any rate. So there certainly is a lot of that interaction.
Yeah, you get a lot of that, I think, because the media is very mixed. British media people and the reporters who are working in Washington, they're all mixing. And they're getting information from each other, and so it's really easy for information and for words to pass that way.
Absolutely. And one of our other guests this week is Catty Kay, and she is a prime example of that cross-filtration. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. I suppose another product of the mass media may be that the number of differences between the two branches of the mother tongue have been reduced. Have you noticed that over the course of your exposure to British English?
Well, I think the British press is very sensitive about this point, that American words are coming over and that there's not going to be a difference anymore. And, there's some of that. There's, if you speak in business speak, there's a lot that goes back and forth between the two, and there's a lot of influence of American business speak on British business and that sort of thing. At the same time, when words come over from one place to another, they very often change. And so, for example, fries, French fries, has gone over to Britain. And, you know, people say, oh, but we say chips. Except if you look at what people do with the word fries, though, they only use it for the skinny kind like you'd get at McDonald's. And the ones that are more traditional British ones are chips. And so you can see the language specializing when it moves and doing interesting things.
Do you suppose that UKIP will advocate a limit on the number of American words that can enter the country at any point in the near future?
UKIP is interesting because, of course, they started as an anti-Europe organization. So they sometimes sort of try to show allegiance to America and especially to certain brands of politics in America. And I loved UKIP had a they had a demonstration, and there was a man holding a poster that said, UKIP wants you, and it had a picture of Uncle Sam on it. And I don't know if they're coming or going, you know, from their relationship with America.
Well, I'm not sure either, given that their former leader, Nigel Farage, has probably one of the most recognizably French names imaginable.
And his wife is German or Russian or something like that. So, they're a funny group.
Yes, they are. And you know, two funny languages, but I do revel in the difference, you know, let alone, and there's a whole different set of subjects we can get into with accent alone, and it's something else that I'm sure, having lived in other Commonwealth countries, that you notice as well. But the wording and the phrasing is something that I've always been fascinated with, and I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of flesh that out with us today. We've been speaking with Lynn Murphy, again, author of the blog Separated by a Common Language, and also the author of The Prodigal Tongue, the love-hate relationship between American and British English. Lynn, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-325-0170. That's 800-325-0170. 800-325-0170.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing.
The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Jessica, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the open road, it used to be something that Americans aspired to, getting out there, traveling across the country, traveling in an RV, maybe even living in one. It seemed to be a promise of freedom. But your investigation that you conducted and written up in this book really seems to be the opposite. It seems to be what people are doing on the way down as opposed to doing on the way up.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever I saw an RV, back before I started working on this book project, I assumed that the occupants were probably the last of the great pensioners, you know, enjoying their golden years on some secure savings and, you know, going to see everything from Old Faithful to Niagara Falls and just, you know, writing postcards along the way. And it just seemed like this really just charmed existence. And while those people, by all means, are still out there, they've been joined by a whole new group of folks who have really been battered around by the economy, particularly in a society where we still have, you know, $7.25 is our federal minimum wage and housing costs keep going up. And for a lot of people, that's put them in a pretty untenable situation, for which going mobile has, you know, has kind of been the valve that releases some of the pressure.
I certainly see people in my neck of the woods, and I live in southern Oregon, who use RVs or trailers as basically their in-law unit. I mean, this is their plan for retirement or to help their parents. And I think it seems to me that's something born of economic necessity. Also, how have some of the people that you've talked to made the decision that I can't afford a home anymore, and this is what I'm going to do instead?
Yeah, I mean, the stories are as unique as the people themselves, but for a lot of people, for a lot of people in general, 2008 was a wake-up call. But for people in particular who are on the brink of retirement and suddenly faced, without having time to make it up, losing their savings, possibly losing their 401ks, losing the equity in their homes that they plan to retire on, it was really a particularly dire blow. So I met people out on the road who had, again, lost all of those things, and some of them had pretty high-profile jobs during their main careers, and I also met people who had been caught on the low-wage treadmill and had never been able to put away enough to retire. And, you know, meanwhile, we live in a culture where pensions have been replaced with 401ks. In the 80s, 401ks were cynically marketed as instruments of financial freedom, while really taking the risk off of the shoulders of the employer and moving it over to the worker. And I think that's been kind of a disaster. So we've got all these factors that have people getting out on the road from different economic strata.
We're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland: Surviving America in the 21st Century. You know, what is day-to-day life like for these folks? And is it actually less expensive than what the alternatives are?
I believe it can be less expensive. People envision that folks living this lifestyle are constantly in motion. And that's actually not true. Hmm. Often it's about getting to where you need to be and staying there for a while. Often they drive less than commuters in urban areas do. So for many people, you know, there are thousands of employers who hire these folks over the country, from Amazon hiring them to do warehouse work, which can involve walking 15 miles on a concrete floor on a day, to Texas oil fields that hire them as gate guards, to the annual sugar beet harvest that hires them to work as ground crew, shoveling beets and doing some other pretty tough work on 12-hour shifts, to campgrounds and national parks all over the country. So that's where you'll find these people is doing these jobs. They are tough jobs. They typically do not pay very well. However, they are one small area of the workforce in which ageism does not seem to be a factor. They are taking all warm bodies and all comers. So a lot of people are working those jobs, and when they're not, they are going financially dormant the best they can. Sometimes they're on public lands where they can camp for free or cheap. Often I see people using solar panels to generate their own electricity because the cost of that technology has come down so incredibly within recent years and put it within reach of a very wide audience. So that's some of the stuff that they're up to.
You know, I hate to draw the parallel, but it kind of seems like you've created a latter-day version of the Grapes of Wrath here. I mean, there's basically a motorized itinerant a class that's burgeoning in America, and that it seems on the face of it that it can't be good.
I think it's pretty challenging, and one of the big differences between these folks who are out on the road now related to economic circumstances and people who were out in the aftermath of the Great Depression, in my mind, is the post-Depression folks always envisioned reintegrating with mainstream society. So everybody was just figured, you know, this is a temporary anomaly. Things are going to get better, and I'll be back in. And meanwhile, today, I don't think people believe that the cavalry is going to come, that things are going to change, that what is starting to feel like a long emergency, you know, in everything from our economy to the climate to just the overarching situation of, you know, how we're going to make it in the world. I don't think people feel like we're going to return to the old quo. I think the idea that we might seems quite clear to them. So most of the people I met were really planning to do this for the long haul. And that was something that surprised me, but it makes sense now.
It's really incredible. Maybe it's more akin to Mad Max than it is to the grapes of wrath. Because I mean, the grapes of meth. Like, what's the ultimate end here? I mean, how does somebody live out their life in a situation where at some point they're not going to be able to drive? And if we are, as a society, and hopefully our leaders, realizing that there is a growing group of people who are turning to this because there's no economic alternative, like, what are we going to end up with? A bunch of people driving around, filling the roads and with, fires in oil barrels to light the chiaroscuro. I mean, what's the end game here?
Oh, I wish I knew what the end game was, but I think the trend will continue to grow, and I also think the crackdown on it is going to keep growing. Right now, we have a widespread wave of what people are worriedly referring to as the criminalization of homelessness. There's also been a crackdown in the national parks. I just got another email yesterday talking about how people who live full-time in their vehicles are being hustled off the land and sometimes not even given the rights that, you know, every person visiting this public land is entitled to in terms of staying there, which is upsetting to me. And at the same time, you know, places where these people gather, I started hanging out with them in 2013, and the numbers are just swelling. The numbers are absolutely swelling. And, you know, there's an interest in the whole tiny house movement and chic minimalism, but people never talk about the fact that economic factors actually may be shaping even those factors. Hmm. And I think there's a lot more of that going on than we realize.
This is an outcropping of a larger problem, which is that we don't have affordable housing in this country, and certainly in places like the San Francisco mm-hmm. Bay Area, where there are people working for enormous companies and often well-paid people who are in this situation that still can't afford basic housing.
Yeah, I met people who were pushed out of the Bay Area when I believe they were in like a manufactured housing park. And, you know, that was swept away for luxury condos, and suddenly those people were living in a van because there was really nowhere else they could afford.
Yeah.
I met a guy also from the Bay Area who had been a San Francisco cab driver for many years, planned to retire on the value of his medallion, but got pushed out by Uber, found his medallion was no longer worth a dime, and is also living in a van. So it's really quite striking to see the situations that have gotten these people out on the road.
Yeah. I just, maybe Tom Joad is out there somewhere, and maybe before he loses the ability to keep driving, he and a few other folks in a similar situation can get together and do something about it, because ultimately, I don't know if there's any other alternative. Jessica Bruder, she is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Thank you so much for talking with us about this, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for caring about these people and their stories.
Happy trails. Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com, follow us on Twitter at nowitsthenews, and until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy trails!
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Pick up two bottles of LicoChops, get the third bottle free.
New improved LicoChops with omega-3, omega-6, vitamin E.
And now, 6 extra direct-fed microbials.
Even better for the digestive tract and immune system.
Try LicoChops. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
Ready for a great day on the boat?
Oh, yeah. Hand me that cooler, will you?
Okay. That everything?
Food, sunscreen, tackle, bait, life jackets?
Nah, we won't need them.
Yeah, but I kind of promised my wife.
No, life jacket? That's a deal breaker, Robert.
Yeah, and I promised my daughter.
Come on, Daddy!
Hand me one of those life jackets, will you?
Yeah. This message brought to you by the National Safe Boating Council and the women who nag you. love you.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
The investigation continues in Branson, Missouri today, where 17 people were killed when a duck boat packed with tourists capsized and sank in high winds on a Missouri lake. Missouri Governor Mike Parson spoke earlier today at a press conference.
The state of Missouri is going to do everything within our powers to make sure that we provide the resources needed to complete this, and two, that I ask for all Missourians for their thoughts and their prayers.
Today at United Nations headquarters, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was asked about the denuclearization of North Korea. He says it's been all laid out for North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un what he needs to do.
Chairman Kim told not only President Trump but President Moon that he was prepared to denuclearize. The scope and scale of that is agreed to. The North Koreans understand what that means. There's no mistake about what the scope of denuclearization looks like. We need to see Chairman Kim do what he promised the world he would do.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
I'm Captain Obvious, and Hotels.com rewards me basically everywhere I stay. So why am I currently skipping stones with four locals and one grizzly bear outside this Riverside Lodge in Portland? Because Hotels.com lets me do me. And because, honestly, the bear just kind of joined in, and now we're afraid that if we stop, he'll get angry. He can smell our fear. Hotels.com. You do you and get rewarded.
When working at a growing business, you wear many hats. The new business hat, the buying toner for the copy machine hat, the sifting through tons of resumes hat. You can throw away that last hat thanks to Indeed.com. When posting your job, Indeed lets you add screener questions that give you a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates. So go ahead, dust off